Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. I do hope you're having a good day. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 75, and today I was very lucky and privileged to have Mr. Michael King. He is the founder and managing director of iPool Rank. He is also a keynote speaker, marketing technologist, and a serial entrepreneur. I've got to say, it was a very interesting conversation. I was very happy to be part of it. Well, I should be part of it. I'm the host of this podcast. But anyway, sit back, enjoy the show, and yeah, please subscribe and have an excellent day. Hey, peace. Yay. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 75. I am pleased. I am very happy to have on the podcast today, Michael King. I've got to say, this guy, he is a managing director at iPool Rank. He's a keynote speaker, marketing technologist, serial entrepreneur, and he plays the banjo. Okay, the last day I lied about that. I have no idea if he plays the banjo, but I know he's got a little bit of a sense of humor with the burning background on this thing right now. How are you today, Michael?
I'm good, man. I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. Now, yeah, before we really sort of kick things off, you know what? I checked your Twitter, and all I've got to say is, for the love of God, for someone who lives in the UK, born, raised, everything like this, do not ever have fish and chips by what that lady prepared. No.
Yo, that was crazy. Because, so, you know, you see videos like that online all the time. Like, I'm a really big fan of the old fashioned, like the drink. And I saw this video that was very similar to the one that I posted yesterday. And, you know, Gordon Ramsay's reaction was like my reaction watching this woman make an old fashioned. So when I saw that, I was like, yo, first of all, I was crying laughing. And second of all, I was like, yo, I got to retweet this.
I have seen a video on TikTok where they make like they sit like similar type lady making tea with her daughter, and like it was like going, yeah, first you put in the milk. I was like, what? Then like, I was like what? Then you put in the milk. I was like, oh god. Then like it was like just like then you microwave it. I was like, the look of horror on my face. It was like going, There are a few things, you cannot get hung in this country for nothing at all. You can commit treason, but if you came with either that abomination of fish and chips or the way they made tea, no, it'll be a capital crime. I tell you that.
No, he was like, "You've never been to Britain." I lost it. I was just crying.
I was like, she will show up one day, like, at Heathrow Airport with her, like, her passport, just come up on the database and go, no.
As it should be. So I'm originally from Philadelphia. And yeah. The thing is that people mess up cheesesteaks in every other city in the world. And so, you know, like, my friends are always like, yo, let's go to such and such and get a cheesesteak. The person's from Philly. It's authentic. And so, you know, I'll humor them and I'll go and I'll watch and I'm just like, nope. And then I just like walk out of the place and they're like, oh, but it's so good. It's like a Philly cheesesteak. And I'm just like, no, it's not. Not at all.
You know what? I have never been to Philadelphia. I've been on the East Coast of the States and New York all the way down. Like, wait, as far north as Boston and as far down as Washington, D.C. So like the thing. Like, I haven't had the privilege to have a Philadelphia cheesesteak, but I've had a deli sandwich. Like, and like, this is the whole thing. Like, if it doesn't feel like it weighs 3 pounds and I basically changes the bag translucent. I'm like, yeah, it's like, you haven't really had a deli sandwich. You just like, oh, yes, I had a deli sandwich.
And that's the thing. You go to the corner store or the bodega, as they call them here in New York. And you get like the best sandwich, you know what I mean? Like, it'll be like, you know, 3 a.m., you just got out of wherever you coming from. You're like, yo, I got to get a turkey and cheese. And all you got to say is, like, turkey and cheese, and they know exactly what to put on it. And it's, like, the most perfect sandwich.
Excellent. Loving it. No, like you see, I could just talk about food now for the rest of this. So it's like, what? Why did you guys start? I think it was about SEO, but you know what I mean? We just went off. I was like, yeah. But yeah, I've got to ask you, like, sort of just getting into it. Mm-hmm. You did a internship for Microsoft. How old were you when you did this?
So that was 95. I was 14.
Okay.
They had a high school internship program, and you know, technically I wasn't supposed to be in the program.
Right.
Because it was meant to be for, you know, people from the Seattle area, and I wasn't from there. But my dad also worked at Microsoft. So you know, he's able to say, like, oh, he lives with me. And so I ended up going out there for the summer, and my job was basically like webmaster. And this is before, you know, before the idea of working on the web turned into 50,000 different jobs.
Yeah.
Where you just did like everything, right? So I made websites for Microsoft's intranet for the OLADB and ODBC groups, the groups that ultimately merged to become ActiveX. And it was actually that summer when CSS came out, ActiveX came out, like the web, you know, had dramatically leapt forward. And this is like in the middle of the browser war. So Internet Explorer was more of a thing.
Yeah.
So it was a crazy summer. And it actually came back to help me out later in life, because when I first started writing for Moz, the guy that was the VP of marketing and then was ultimately the CMO of Moz was somebody that was in my internship program with me. And he and I, we had built this thing called InternWeb, which was basically like social media for the interns at Microsoft. And, you know, we got featured in the Microsoft newsletter called the Micro News. So like he and I were friends. We lost touch over time, but then like we reconnected after I started talking to Moz. So it's just really interesting how like that experience definitely helped drive, you know, the rest of my career. Mm. Because I just made websites before then. Like it was just a thing I did, you know. I was just like, I got this book called Creating Cool Websites with HTML. And like maybe the beginning of that summer or beginning of that year or whatever. No, it was beginning of when I started in high school. And then that summer I went to Microsoft. So like this random book that I got, and then this kind of random internship that I did set the tone for like the things I would do in the future.
Yeah, because like this is the thing, like when you say 95 computing, okay, look, we just sort of got out of like the American online sort of, like, like it was just sort of like crawling out of that. And like to like be like, okay, yeah, I was making, there you go. You were making websites. Like before that, it's like, that is kind of trippy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been on the internet since like 92, you know, I was like 12 or something. And when I say the internet in 92, it was largely like Prodigy and bulletin board systems and things like this, like the original stuff, you know, like the stuff that you hear about in TV shows, like Halt and Catch Fire and stuff like that. So yeah, like in a lot of ways, that those formative years like very much prepared me for this stuff. So the first job I ever had, and I've told this story before, but I always think it's an interesting story. And first time somebody paid me to do something, like period, was because I hacked this server and I kept hacking it. And then one day the owner and operator came on the Linux chat, and he was like, yo, can you please stop hacking me? I will pay you to do something. And you know, it was a smart strategy. Like for effectively $150, this guy like got his livelihood back. So he basically hired me to write tutorials for Perl scripts, like, you know, like guest books and all the stuff like the early web had. And he paid me $150. I used it to buy a pair of Jason Kidds, and that was it. You know, I didn't really, at the time, I wasn't like, yo, I'm gonna make this a career of some sort. I was just like, yeah. Oh yeah, that's the internet. That's a fun thing to play with. So yeah.
The internet, a fun thing to play with back in 95, right? Let's just say it was, how can I put it? When was I introduced to the internet? I think I was maybe 93. Like, because like all I heard was the classic noise of
modem. Yep.
I was like what's that? It's the internet. What's the internet? Oh yeah, it's like okay.
Yeah, I mean, back then, like, it wasn't, I mean, it was the internet because it's like a network of interconnected computers, but it wasn't, you know, this is like before AOL. I mean, I guess AOL existed. I just wasn't on it until like, I don't know, 93 or 4 or something like that. But like, it would be, you know, I would use my modem, my like 1200 BPS modem, to call my friend's computer across town so that we could like chat and share files and like, you know, like games that people made in QBasic and things like that. And then it would also be like you dial into BBSs and things like that. But, you know, that's why it's kind of like, I don't have the same learning curve that a lot of people have when they come onto the web, or they came onto the web like after 2000 and they don't know how to use command lines and things like that. Like, that is all stuff that you had to know how to do to use things when I was younger. And the other thing is that, you know, I come from a world where it was like, all right, to build a website, there was no front end and back end. There was like, no, you build a website and you got to figure out how to configure the server and you got to figure out all these things. So, you know, this idea of like, oh, you just do meta tags, or you just do, excuse me, you just make components in React or whatever. Like, that is so foreign to me. Because I'm just so used to it being like, no, yo, you handle everything.
Yeah, you know what? This is the thing. Like, when I was doing HTML, like for a semester or two, like I was, how can I say it? I was awfully excited when I had a rollover graphic work for me problem. it's like, it changes. It's a miracle. Again, yes. You know what I mean? Like, don't forget about getting into anything complicated like Java or anything like that. Like, you know what I mean? That was about as far as it went. And, oh, Pascal as a programming language. But, yeah. But, no.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, when I was younger, like that age, I just wanted to be a game programmer. Like, that was my original dream. Like, I was just like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, learn how to code. I'm going to go to school, get a degree in computer science. I'm going to get out of school and I'm going to make $65,000 and I'm going to make games. Like, that was my dream, right? So everything I did as a adolescent youth was around that. It was like, all right, I want to buy all these books on coding. I went to like computer camp and all these other things. But at the same time, obviously I had other interests. Like, I went to basketball camp. I was making music, all this other stuff too. But yeah, my expectation was just like, all right, I got to learn as much as I can now because it's going to be even harder when I get to college. And that just wasn't true. Like, I was well ahead of our curriculum at the time. And, you know, it was kind of boring because, like, I already knew C, I already knew Pascal, I already knew BASIC, I already knew. Only thing I learned in school was Java, but I already knew JavaScript, and obviously those two things are different, but it's all C-based syntax, so like it wasn't difficult to wrap my head around things.
Yeah, but so, if you think about it, when you went to college, like Howard, right? Like, yeah, you think about it, 99, like everything was still very fresh and new. And like it's been 20 years, 21 years since then. And things have obviously developed, but it's just like, you like kind of look at it and go, wow, it's such a short period of time. And to be like, okay, the curriculum, how comes you guys are not doing this? And how comes you're not doing that? And they must probably look to you and just only work this out ourselves.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, Howard's curriculum has come a long way. They've partnered with Google since I left the school, and you know, they've just dramatically improved what they offer. So, you know, had I been a little younger, it may have been more interesting to me. And that's not to say that like the math stuff, that was all valuable because I didn't know, you know, calculus three and discrete structures and linear algebra and all that going into it. But you know, for what we were doing on the actual coding side, I was just like, this is stuff I was doing when I was 13. You know, like it didn't really make sense for me. And so the point I was trying to make is that, you know, with things moving so fast, like when I got into school in 99, there was like no Google. You know, Google like popped up at the end of my freshman year, and I remember it being talked about and so on. And then, you know, fast forward a couple years, like all anyone was using. So I had always imagined like, all right, if I didn't go directly to work for some, you know, computer or some gaming company to build a game, I would have ended up at like a DEC, which was like, you know, like a Sun Microsystems or whatever, which were like some of the bigger computer companies at the time. And you know, I think if ultimately I would have stuck with you know, computer science in that way, I probably would have ended up on the West Coast because like my stepmother, she was a VC or she still is a VC, and she was plugging me in for internships and things like that. So I think that I probably would have like eventually ended up in a Google or something like that. But ultimately my path was different because I just decided to make music instead. I did that for 8 years, and then I ended up back in like the tech world later on.
Yeah, because like this is the thing. You like, how can I say? You had your foot, like your feet in two worlds. You went from, it was like you were in tech, then you were in music, then you were in tech, you were in music. Like, what sort of like kicked off this sort of desire to like, yeah, do music?
I mean, so my life story is very much like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in that my parents moved my parents moved me out of Philly to go to a private school in Connecticut. And you know, one of the things that I did to still feel like connected to Philly is really like dive deep into hip hop. So all things hip hop, like break dancing, DJing, graffiti, and also rapping. And so it was just something that I really enjoyed doing. And once I got to Howard, you know, where I'm finally surrounded by a bunch of really dope MCs, like we had a school sponsored MC battle. And, you know, it just like really triggered my competitive nature to just be like the best MC possible. And there was one point where my dad called me. He was like, "Yo, you're going half-ass at music. You're going half-ass at school. You should pick one or the other." And I assumed that he thought I would pick, you know, staying with school. But I didn't because I was like, "Yo, I can go to school whenever. I can't be like a 40-year-old rapper because there was no 40-year-old rappers at the point there are now. Shout out to Jay-Z." But you know, so ultimately, those are like the two things that I've always been most interested in is music and computers. And you know, as things have gotten increasingly digital, especially on the music end, the worlds are basically like, you know, overlapping in a lot of ways. And the thing is, when I was doing music for a living, you know, there was a lot of rappers out there that would call people like me internet rappers because we use the internet to like get our stuff out. And whereas now you've got like the biggest rappers in the world dropping their singles on SoundCloud and then tweeting them out and so on. And it's kind of like I was in the wrong generation. Had I been like a few years younger or a few years older, it would have worked out better for me. Because if I was in the older direction, I would have been more like,
Traditional.
yeah, more traditional, like been more like seeped in that world, where instead I was like, I have the internet. I can reach millions of people. Let's use this. And there's that negative connotation with those older people. And then there's the younger people who were too young for when I was doing this first.
Yeah.
And now they're older and like I stopped. So it's not as impactful. So, it's just that there's a lot of overlap between those worlds. And ultimately I got back into, you know, the technical marketing side of things because I got into a bike accident and I needed to get a job to pay my medical bills. And the first place to hire me was an SEO agency because of my technical background. Mm. And so that kind of just like, you know, went from there.
Right. Got into a bike accident.
Yeah, not even like a motorcycle, nothing cool, like literally a bicycle. So where I'm from in Philly,
yeah.
Said that twice now. You know, busting willies on your bike is like what people do. You know, we just like ride down the street, riding willies and all this. And I was on a bike, and I don't even think I was popping a willie in this case. I was just like riding the bike, and the bike wasn't well put together. And so like the front wheel came off. And it got stuck in the pedal area. And so the bike stopped, but I didn't. And like, I went over the handlebars. I just wasn't prepared at all. So it wasn't good.
I just be grateful there was no sort of like cell phones around to record your accident at the time. So when you went over the handlebars and you was like, yeah, you went to hospital, I take it, and went, hey.
Yeah, I drove myself to the hospital. It was actually a really messed up situation because I called a bunch of friends. I was like, yo, I had this accident. Can somebody bring me to the hospital? Because I had this job in high school of, I was working at Yale and I was doing data entry on medical claims. So I knew precisely how much it costs to call an ambulance. And I was like, I'm not calling that. It could be like $10,000 just to go a couple miles. So not doing that. So, you know, no one showed up, and then I ended up driving myself with like a ice pack on my face, and I get there, and you know, they basically like stitch me up. I had to go to the dentist and get like a tooth replaced and all this, but I couldn't do that for like a week, and I had a show, so I'm like walking around with the N95 mask before it was cool, and you know, I'm at this show, like, you know, I gotta like pull it off to rock the mic.
Yeah.
Anyway, so ultimately that all got sorted out and I had a really hefty medical bill despite the fact I didn't call the ambulance. And so I was like, yeah, there's no Obamacare at this point, so I got to get a job. Ooh. And so I started working at this SEO agency and I really enjoyed it because, like, you know, the day would just fly by. It would be like, I would get there at, let's say, 9 o'clock or whatever. And, you know, next thing I know, it's 5 o'clock, or it was just a lot of fun. But this is also the year, this is 2006. This is also the year that I was about to go on my first European tour.
Okay.
And so this happened in August, I think. And the tour is going to be in November. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll keep this job, get enough money, you know, and then quit when it's time to go on tour. So that time almost comes and I let my boss know and I'm like, yo, you know, gotta go. And he was like, wait. One, you're awesome at this. Two, have you heard of working from home? And I'm like, what? So basically I took my laptop on tour and it was like a heavy Dell laptop from 2006.
Yes.
And I basically just did SEO from the road on tour. And kept the job. And that, it just blew my mind that I was able to do that, like just clock in some hours while I'm traveling between cities and whatever. And yeah, it was very much a game changer for me. But for the next few years, I just kept my jobs until my bosses pissed me off. And then I would go back on tour. Mm. And then eventually, you know, I ended up getting a job at Razorfish, which is a big ad agency. And I was like, yeah, these are really smart people. I enjoy this. So, like, let's see what happens if I stick with it. And, yeah, the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. Like, 2006, working from home. Like, look, this is the thing. Yeah, right now, with planet lockdown or planet partial lockdown, as we're, like, living in right now, like working from home sort of like has fast forwarded by 10 years for many people right now. This would have been like 2030, people would be doing this more so, but be like going 2006, working from home and being able to do your tour. That is kind of like trippy to say the least.
Yeah, you know, I had heard of that as a concept, you know, this idea of like telecommuting, because that's all people called it then, right? Mm. And, you know, I knew a couple people that did it, but it was like, oh no, this is only for people that have been working for years. Whereas like I had a very spotty work history and I didn't think anybody would trust me with that idea. So I never even considered telecommuting. But yeah, once he pitched it to me and I was like, all right, cool. I can do that. So yeah, it laid the framework or the groundwork for what we do today.
Okay. Right. So with that, you like Razorfish. That was the thing. What was the like sort of like, this is my sliding doors moment. I either stick with music or I go into this next thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were
going to say them. Yeah, no. Like the way you said, yeah, I was like, you're like, yeah.
That's exactly what it was. You know, when I got that job, first of all, like I applied because it sounded like a cool job. And then I would tell people like, yeah, I'm interviewing for Razorfish. And they'd be like, what? You're interviewing for Razorfish? That place is crazy. And I'm like, yeah, no doubt. Like not trying to, you know, psych myself out with it. And anyway, ultimately, they didn't offer me the full-time job because I had no experience writing about SEO. I only had experience doing SEO. Mm. So like I said before, it was like my experience was largely like, all right, here's a website. You figure out all the things that we need to do in order to make this happen. And so in my previous roles, it was like, all right, we have direct FTP access to this website. Download it, make the changes, upload it, and, you know, that's it. Whereas when you work for an agency like that, they just do deliverables about things. And so because I didn't have that experience, they were like, you know, you clearly know a lot, but we don't know that you can do this job. So they offered me a job that was lower than the job that I had applied for. And they also made it like a contract role rather than full time. And so I was like, all right, boom, let me really focus in on this and kill it so they have to offer me the full-time job. So I was doing things like building like tools and stuff and, you know, just killing all the work that they would give me. Like I was burning through work so fast that they basically had to give me like a bunch of busy work to, you know, really basically like make sure that the time I was allocated was gonna be filled. And so I kept doing things that were like above and beyond, like creating tools and you know, like staying late and all this. And ultimately they just kept extending my contract. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I'm not trying to like keep doing this. So what I did is I was like, I'm going to go get another job offer from another publicist agency, bring it back. And then they'll have to hire me because it's within the network. So I did that. And they were like, yeah, we still can't hire you. And so then I took the job at Publicist Modem and moved to New York. And then like my SEO career kind of just went from there when I got really involved in all the thought leadership stuff.
Mm, because like when you, like I know SEO search engine like optimization and people, like when you say that to people, they do two things. They either look at you completely blank.
Mm-hmm.
Or the second thing is they look at you and go, you know the dark arts. it's like, tell me more. So like this is the thing, you really got your reps in at Razorfish to build up your skills. So you knew about the writing side. So you knew the mechanics, but the writing side, was that like for articles or?
No, so it's more like writing the deliverable. So whereas previously someone would just give me a website and I would fix it, what they did is they would write like you know, a PowerPoint about all the things that were wrong and all the things they recommended fixing, right? So then the next step would be like a presentation of that. And then once whoever needs to be on board is on board, they go and fix it. And then we look again to make sure that they're doing it. So it, effectively, it's just like consulting, right? Okay. Rather than like actually doing stuff. And, you know, it was
true. Say, would argue with you, say consultants always do stuff. Oh, look at the eye roll.
I'm saying, like, there's a lot of consultants that can tell you to do things that they've never done. So,
okay.
I mean, who would you rather hire? Someone who can talk about doing stuff or someone that can actually do stuff?
Well, you know, I mean, if I was in charge of a corporate budget, you know, you never know. You never know.
But, you know, it was actually kind of tricky at first because, you know, it's like I would be interacting with people that didn't know how to do things.
Yeah.
When I did, and they'd be trying to tell me like, no, it works this way. And I'm like, actually, it doesn't. But I didn't have the gravitas at that point to be able to be like, no, that's not true. And we shouldn't be writing about this way.
Mm.
So once I was able to like really understand that, because at first it was like, oh, I'm assuming these people are all just better than me at all of this. And now they've transitioned to writing about stuff when it's not true. So once I figured that out, and once I got to the point where I was like comfortable with deliverables and all of that, then I was able to inject like the more creative aspects to it as well. So like, as I've gotten more involved in thought leadership, it's like, okay, the way that we do this as an industry is wrong, and I have a better idea for how we do it.
Mm.
And so that's driven a lot of the success that we've had, because more often than not, I've been right. And I'm not saying this like I'm some sort of genius or anything. It's just I have a confluence of experiences that make me understand this in ways that a lot of people in our industry don't. Mm. And that's not to say that you've got to be like super technical or you've got to have the background that I have to figure things out. There's plenty of people out there that have come up with clever things that have never, you know, written a line of code. But in a lot of cases, SEOs are happy with being like, oh, it depends, or, you know, it could go this way or it could go that way, which to some degree is true. But if you have a better understanding of the computer science behind things, you know which of those it depends are not really it depends. It's like it's because of X, Y, and Z. And if we do A, B, and C, we can impact that. And so having that context has allowed us to be very successful at getting results for our clients.
Like, one of the things which, like, with the whole pandemic going on right now, like, with the amount of internet traffic, I have no idea what percentage has gone up. Has that made SEO tougher now, or has it made it easier?
It hasn't made it either inherently. It's actually made it's made there be more opportunity. So what you're talking about impacts search volume, like the amount of people searching for a given thing, right? It doesn't inherently make the SERPs more competitive.
Mm.
What makes the SERPs more competitive is the fact that more people are like, all right, well, we're not going to spend a ton of money in paid media. Let's focus on lower funnel traffic that is quote unquote free. So the reality of it is that people will spend 100 times more on paid search than they'll spend on SEO. But because everybody's paid search has been slashed and their display has been slashed and so on, they're trying to figure out, okay, where can we put less money to get more value? So the issue is more that more people are trying to do SEO right now. And so the competition is going to go up. But the fact that there are more people going online does not inherently make SEO harder.
Right, I see. So just basically because everyone's budgets are being slashed and that's going to be going forward for God knows how long, like they're just trying new things and SEO is the, like everyone's kind of like gone, you remember SEO? Yeah, yeah. I remember SEO, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, if you look at any of the studies around like how marketing budgets are changed and all that, they all say like, okay, people are spending more on search. Mm. And it is often search in general, but it's typically more on SEO because of what I just said. And so there's gonna be more and more people vying for those top 10 positions, or even less positions in some cases. But, you know, it's there's more people to capture right now. And so more people want a bigger part of that pie.
Right. And when you say less in some places, what places might this be at this present time? I'm not trying to sniff out an opportunity or anything.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, Google is there are some SERPs that don't have 10 results on the first page anymore. And so there's less opportunity because, you know, let's say there's only 7 positions. Well, you know, there's 3 people that are not going to be on that first page anymore. So that's what I mean when I say that there's less opportunities.
Okay. I see. So what are, like, you're a founder and managing director of iPool Rank now.
Mm-hmm.
What made you like, oh, you know what? I've worked for a number of different places. Like I've seen stuff. It's time for me to get my flag and claim some territory myself.
I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, I feel like I work with so many knuckleheads that I didn't think were doing it right. So I felt like I got an education in how to do it wrong in a lot of ways. Not to say that every place I worked was full of knuckleheads, but a lot of them were. And, you know, I just kind of learned like, all right, well, if these people can do it and mm-hmm. they can be successful, and I feel as though I'm smarter than them, or at least I feel as though my way would be more effective than them, then why not give it a shot? Mm. And what it came down to is the last job I had, I was like, all right, well, I got enough money in the bank where if I don't make a dime, I will be able to pay rent for the next 6 months. So why not? You know, at that point I didn't have any children and I was like, this is the time to do it. Thing is that I did it in one of the most expensive cities in the United States. So it was inherently going to be more difficult than, let's say I moved back to Philly, like it'd be way easier, you know? I was talking to Will Reynolds one time when I was in their office for an event they had, and I was just curious. I was like, yo, because they have almost the entire building. It's like this 8-floor building in what's called Northern Liberties in Philly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, how much does a floor in this building cost? And at the time, we were in a WeWork, and that WeWork was probably, you know, a little less than the size of my apartment. And we were paying something like, I want to say like $14,000 a month, right?
Oh.
He was saying for an entire floor, which had to be like at least, you know, 6,000-7,000 square feet, they're paying $8,000 a month. And I was just like, what? Like,
so
it kind of gives me the context of like, you know, me starting my agency where I am is just inherently more expensive than other cities. So it's like, I play the game on the highest difficulty possible. But yeah, it really just came down to, you know, me getting to a point where I feel as though I'm creating things for this space.
Yeah.
And to do it for other companies, because I am so visible, I often ran into these issues where the company wanted to do something and then people would be like, Mike, why are you doing that? And I'm like, that's not me. That's the company. So I needed to get away from that. I needed to be in a place where I can make the decisions that I'm being held responsible for.
I see. So, like, basically, where you could read Cat in the Hat with your smoking pipe and jacket.
That was before then, but yes.
So, with this, you're like, I've got to say, when you say $14,000 for a week works, like, which, $14,000. Like, oh my God. So like, I imagine taxes, like New York is like, how can I say? They are a expensive tax state as well, aren't they?
Well, I mean, not as expensive as your taxes are.
Hey, look, it depends where you're looking at it from. If you're looking at it from like, yeah, like 1% earning, like top 1%, yeah, there's games you can play, but there's, no, like, yeah, when you're in that game, no one pays, like, no one pays all, like, what they're meant to really pay.
Right. Pretty much. Yeah, but taxes are definitely higher here because New York has both state and city tax.
Yeah.
Most other cities don't have that, or most other states don't have that. And the other thing is that, you know, I actually registered my business in New York State, which typically people don't do. They typically will register their business in a state like Delaware or another state that doesn't have state tax.
Yeah.
And the reason why I did that was because at the time, New York had this promotion where you didn't pay taxes for 10 years. But they specifically had it for tech companies. And I assumed, I was like, well, we're a tech company. No, we're not. We're a professional services company. So that was actually a large mistake that I should probably rectify sooner than later.
I'm sure you will. And so this is the thing. You're doing this like you're contemplating the rent in New York and trying to get out of that. And yeah, what got you onto like speaking as well?
Yeah, that was like a natural progression for me because, again, you know, I made music for a living and I played shows all over the world. I didn't play in Antarctica, but, you know, everywhere else.
Well, if they give you enough time, I'm sure you would be there. Hey.
Yeah, I'd be playing in a snowsuit. That'd be great.
Yep. And you hear me?
Now, one time I played in this like really cold place in Canada, and that was enough for me. So I'm all good on Antarctica. But anyway, you know, as I got more into the space, because I didn't know much about the SEO community until like 2010 or 2011. Because I was just doing it, and it was like just a job. I wasn't really reading the blogs like that. And, you know, I actually ended up like reinventing the wheel a bunch of times as well because of that, because like I didn't know what people had out there. But anyway, as I learned more about it, the more I was like, yo, this is cool. Like this is like doing a concert, you know? And so the more I learned about it, the more I was like, yeah, I want to do that. And I went to MozCon in 2011. And this is, again, like right around the time where I started writing for Moz and everything. And I just wanted to meet everybody, you know? And that was a great opportunity. And I have a whole story about this on a site talking about how it was the best investment that I had made. You know, because I was trying to get my company to send me, and they kept giving me the runaround. And I was like, all right, cool. Well, I'm going to take that week off, and I'm going to spend my own money, and I'm going to go. And I did that, and, you know, I just met everybody, and ultimately they asked me to become a Moz associate, and it was just like building that relationship, and that was super helpful. So yeah, like literally while I was sitting there at MozCon, I'm watching Will Reynolds speak, and I'm like, yo, they let Black people do this? Okay, I'm in. So like, I pitched for SMX East while I was watching him on stage, and I got it. And I did well, and people saw, and it just created that snowball effect. In that phase kind of culminated with me speaking at MozCon for the first time the following year. And that year, I was real heavy into Mad Men at this point, and my whole deck was Mad Men themed, and I got like a custom Brooks Brothers suit that looked like something Don Draper would wear. And so there was turntables on the stage all day. I went last and nobody knew why the turntables were there. And they introduced me. And then the theme music for Mad Men drops, which was done by a producer named RJD2 that I know. And I come out and I'm rhyming over the beat in the suit. And I've got like the Kinetic Typography video behind me. And I felt like that was the moment that kind of like solidified, like, no, I'm here, I'm doing this. And I'm gonna do this to a level that other people aren't. And so, you know, it just continued to snowball from there. Like people like really reaching out to me on a regular basis, like, yeah, we need you to speak at our event. And this year I spoke at MozCon and we actually did a movie. So because it was a virtual conference this year, I was like, let's maximize this medium. And it was also pre-recorded. So I was like, yeah, like, what, why should I do anything other than a movie? So we made this like SEO movie that was kind of like a mix between Batman the Animated Series and Mr. Robot.
Okay.
And yeah, check it out. It's called Runtime. It's on our website.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, people were kind of just like, what is happening right now? You know, like watching the reaction to it was very fulfilling for me, but also what we created, I think, is going to be something that, you know, people are going to continue to extract value from. And I also laid out a bunch of tactics that I don't think a lot of people had considered before this. So it was, I think, personally, from my perspective, it was like dope on a bunch of different layers and kind of helps move the thinking around a lot of things forward as well. And I'm excited to see what it inspires in other people that are also awesome at SEO. And, you know, maybe someone else might make a movie in the future when they do a conference. Who knows?
Hey, you never know. You may have just started. You may be the spark which ignites a new thing entirely.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It was definitely a lot of work. So, you know, maybe other people aren't going to do that. But, you know, I really think that it was a good opportunity for us to stand out. And I think that that's something that gets lost in marketing, like marketing to marketers about marketing. Because especially in the SEO space where it's like a lot of people saying the same thing. And when I approach things, I'm like, all right, you know, even if I'm saying the same thing, how can I say it in a way where there's a unique value from what I'm doing? And frankly, I'm just kind of surprised that more people aren't doing that stuff because we're all marketing to marketers about marketing.
I would say, like, this is the thing. With all the tools which are out there, not like sort of like just in the marketing sense, just from the sort of production of like content, it's just like cameras are cheaper. You can do things on your phone. You can basically get out to a number of different platforms and really sort of make a mark. Like even if you put social media to one side, you can like do your own blog. You can do like podcasts. You can like basically have your own sort of TV channel running on like YouTube if you wanted. It's just a world of opportunity right now, which haven't really had it before. Like 2008, when things sort of like went wonky before, it was totally different then. And if you went back to like 99, when it went wonky again, like all the things we've got today would be like, are you mad? Are you like you can't get that stuff?
I mean, think about just the idea of, you know, making a video, right? Like you used to have a camcorder, then some sort of device to connect the camcorder to the computer. Then you'd have to edit it and so on. Now you can do all that in 5 seconds on your phone and it can be super high quality. People make movies with phones. Yeah. Like if you think about a movie like Belly, you remember Belly with like Nas and DMX them? That movie probably costs millions of dollars. I could shoot that movie in its entirety in an Airbnb with three phones. Just think about that.
Yeah.
No. And like, you know, just the idea of even like creating music, right? You used to have to buy very specific equipment that would be like, you know, $5,000-$10,000, or, you know, there's cheaper versions too, but you would definitely have to shell out like at least $1,000 to have a setup to make a song.
Yeah.
Now you can do all that on your computer with what your computer comes with. If you've got a Mac, it comes with GarageBand. You can record a song right there, right? So not only is the technology more readily available, but we also now have, like, everyone has broadband, unless you live in a developing country, you may not. But like in most cases, you have broadband. And so not only can you make things real easily with your computer, but you can also watch things that are very high quality. So there is no, and then you can, like you say, you can reach a very specific audience with whatever you're creating via social media. So we've got the manufacturing ability, we've got the distribution channels. It's really just up to you to make something that is interesting that everyone wants to see and then promote it. Like there, if you want to be famous, like if you are somebody like, yo, I want to be famous.
Yeah.
You can just do that. All you got to do is the work. Like if you think about influencers, right? These are people that are just like, hey, I want to make content for a living. And so they do it. And then they generate a bunch of followers on a bunch of different channels. And then that becomes valuable to brands. And then they use that to make money. Mm. And now they're famous. Like they've got tens of millions of people that just watch them do stupid things on the internet every day. And now, like, you know, they end up in commercials and they end up in films and so on. And then they become famous because they decided they wanted to be famous. So if there's anything you want to do, the internet has really democratized those opportunities, and it doesn't cost much. It really just requires you to be creative and stand out. And again, us as marketers, we should be able to do that all the time. But I think that there's so many like ideas of how things should be rather than thinking about how they can be. Mm. And that stops a lot of us from being, you know, as interesting or compelling or as impactful and successful as we may want to be.
Yeah. Would you say there is in the realm of marketing a lot of sort of status quo thinking?
Oh, of course. Of course. And, you know, I don't know that that is anyone's fault. Mm. I mean, it depends how you look at it. Like if I'm not speaking in public, I probably say it's everybody's fault. But I don't think it's anyone's fault because, like, you know, at the end of the day, you're scoped with getting certain results, and there's always that risk of doing something differently. And so you look at what's out there and you're like, okay, this looks like it's working. Mm. And then you learn how to do that. And then that's it. But for me, that's never been enough. You know, it's always been like, all right, what can we do here? Like, what is it that isn't being done that is interesting, that aligns with my values and the things I care about that can be done here? So if that's like coming out at a conference rapping, or yep, making a film, or writing a blog post using Smurfs to explain a complicated marketing segmentation concept, then I'm gonna do that. You know, like that's what keeps this being interesting to me. And so you might imagine, like, the way that I bring things to our clients as well. It's not just what I do in public for marketing. It's like, all right, now I'm gonna challenge our clients in the same way. Mm. And, you know, it doesn't always work. And as far as like them buying into what I want to do, but I've created enough of a reputation that people are at least listening to me. And I appreciate that in and of itself, because there's a lot of people that would bring things like this to the table and they're just like, nah, we're not doing that. So, yeah.
Like, I'm looking forward to when you next do something in the animated superhero like thing in the styling of the classic Batman, the animated series, maybe like throwing a little bit of Justice League Unlimited, but yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that'd be great when it comes to that. Like, so when you, like, the world was vastly different when, like, 20 years ago, like, what if I had the power to grant you a wish, like, what would you like to change something over the next 20 years? What would that be?
The main thing that is on my mind right now is eliminating cultural and racial bias from artificial intelligence. And what I mean by that, the best example I can think of is when Google Photos first came out, it misidentified a Black woman as a gorilla. And why does that happen? Because you don't have Black people working on this type of technology. Mm. It's mostly white people and, you know, in a lot of cases, Asian people as well. So I think that we need, are you familiar with the Turing test? If you're not, the Turing test is basically, just for anyone who's watching who doesn't know, yeah, what this is, it's a test to determine whether or not a computer is actually self-aware. So is it just running your program, or is it actually self-aware? Can it understand that it exists and that it's thinking or what have you? I think we need something similar to that for determining whether or not a piece of artificial intelligence is racist or not, or if it's, you know, culturally biased or not. Mm. And, you know, that's something very difficult to codify, but I mean, you know, we're doing all types of amazing things with AI right now, so I'm sure it can be done. But leading up to that, I think we need more like diverse data sets. So if you think about names, right? Like, I'm sure that Siri has difficulty saying your name. and you know, that's because the data sets that go into a program like Siri don't account for enough cultures, and definitely Black culture. So I think we need more diverse data sets. Mm-hmm. And then also I think that we need to be, you know, just like having some sort of watchdog for this type of stuff. So when you ask me 20 years from now, like, I would like to see that already baked into everything, mm-hmm. so that our biases as a human species are not built into our technology moving forward. And yeah, I'd also like to see, you know, what those advancements afford us, like AI plus nanotechnology and all that. I think that there's a world where, you know, human beings are repaired, right? Like, I think one of the reasons that we die is because our parts just kind of give out.
Yeah.
Like, if you got, like, you know, nanotech, which could, like, fix your heart and can figure out what the problem is, then maybe we can live a lot longer.
Like a world of nanotechnology and non-racist AI system. Yeah. Like this is the thing, huh?
We can dream, right?
We can dream. And through dreams, and that's how reality forms and shapes itself. Mm-hmm. So, like, with regards to, like, the first part, like, changing AI, would you say it was unusual for you, being in the realm of tech? You were quite fortunate because your father was, like, working in Microsoft, like, your mother was a VC, and, like, it was a case of, it was
my, like, stepmom was a VC.
Yeah,
sorry. My mom works in healthcare.
Okay. My thoughts are with her, because it's been a tough.
She works more on the administrative side. So one, and I think it's really important for me to touch on this. My mom, she has always done a lot to, I'm going to say it wrong, but basically she's trying to bring equality in healthcare. So, you know, growing up, she saw a lot of people, including her father, not get the same level of treatment or care that, you know, white people would get. And so she works at the Joint Commission, which is a agency that basically polices, for lack of a better term, different hospitals. So making sure that those hospitals are up to code and so on, so they can continue to operate and, you know, get their government funding. So she's done a lot in her career to improve the equality of treatment that people get. And I say all that because I'm super proud of my mom. She's done a lot of awesome work. But yeah, so I was definitely very fortunate because, you know, there's a lot, like I said, a lot of the people that I went to school with, it was their first exposure to coding when we were, you know, in college, right? Whereas, again, I've been doing this since I was 12, and it was largely just out of me being curious and having access to computers, and then my parents supporting me learning about that stuff. But I remember, you know, even in high school, I was making web pages. I made the first website I made that was public was like a Brandy fan site, like the singer Brandy.
Yeah, no, I remember Brandy. I remember Brandy.
Yeah. When I was 15, I was all about Brandy. It was Aaliyah, and then Aaliyah married R. Kelly, and I was like, okay, I'm off her. Now it's Brandy.
Yeah.
And I did this website, and I remember showing it in the school library to, like, other Black kids in my school, and they were just like, what is the web? What are you doing? Like, what is it? And so just having that access absolutely gave me, you know, much more of a leg up than a lot of other people. And I didn't really understand it for what it was at the time. I was just like, I'm doing some thing that I find fun, you know? So yeah, definitely super valuable, especially because it is ultimately what I ended up doing with my career.
Yeah. Now, this is like one of the things I think about, like especially in the realm of tech. It's like I don't generally like put things just down into racial bars. I just like go, okay, excellence, 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 the pursuit of excellence. But there has to be also opportunity for like the next wave and like getting more opportunity for to be more people like yourself in the realm of tech is one of the things which I think is a great challenge. Saying that Howard has been working with Google to help improve their program is a step in the right direction. But it's still, I'd still say the realm of tech, because it is the new frontier per se, even now, 20 years in, and it's just to get bigger and bigger and bigger, more people like need to get into it. What would you, like, I know you're not part of the education system or anything like this, but if there was something, Hugo, this would be a step in the right direction. What do you think would be?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of programs that are building the pipeline of people of color going into tech. Like there's tons of things like Black Girls Code and any number of programs like that. Mm. And, you know, I think it's really important for us to support those, right? Like, and give back. And so with my daughters, I've got two little girls, one that just turned 4 and one that'll be 1 next month. It's very important that we expose them to all that type of STEM education and so on. Yeah. But beyond that, I think, I don't want to say that it's enough, like as far as like the exposing people to things, like there's definitely more that can be done. But I think that there are a lot of people working on that. I think the bigger problem is getting those people, once they get into the game, like once they have their, you know, their entry level jobs or their middle management jobs, how do we get those people into leadership? Like that is something that is very much lacking, you know, worldwide, right? And so my former manager, actually a Nigerian guy from the UK by the name of Tony Effick, my former manager, he's here in New York. He recently started something called Black and Brilliant. And it's all about getting people through the middle to the leadership stages. And so I'm very involved in that I lead our tech and media groups. And what we're tasked with is education. So creating content to educate people and help them upskill so that they're more focused, or excuse me, they're more capable of breaking through the middle. And then we also deal with all the technical infrastructure. So, you know, building the website, making all the social channels work together. We do like online panels. So like managing all that stuff. And then there's all these things that we want to build into the website to support these efforts as well. And then we also manage content. So that is one of the core ways that I'm beginning to give back by, you know, helping with this kind of advocacy group that we're building out. But beyond that, it's really just like spending my money in the right places that are really supporting these efforts as well. Like for instance, whenever you order from Amazon, if you go to like smile.amazon.com, they'll donate a portion of the proceeds to a group. And I always do it to Black Girls Code. This is really important to me. Mm. So yeah, there's any number of ways to get involved, but where I'm not, you know, necessarily out here protesting, I am using the power that I have to kind of make a change that'll like scale, basically
using your leverage in a more effective manner, in a different effective manner. Like I think I saw a post from you earlier today, Maurice Nicholson. Like I had him on the podcast a few weeks back.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
He was on our panel last night.
Ah, superb. What was I doing? I thought I think it just didn't come through to me in time, but how was the panel last night?
It was great. It was great. We had, you know, 5 different panelists from different types of organizations. So Maurice is from Google.
Yeah.
We had a couple other folks from like NBC Universal and CMO of a big agency and so on. And this is the second panel that we had. We had another one last week, very similar type of group of people that have made it to leadership. Like one of which was CEO of Ogilvy and Mather, someone who's in, you know, hiring leadership at Google and so on. So it's a lot of great insight from people that have made it to leadership positions and what is it that they had done to get there. So I think it was very much like a conversation to help motivate people and also give them direction and give them some game of how they should like identify advocates and leverage their networks and so on. And, you know, just a lot of things to like help galvanize folks and make sure that they're going in the right direction. I think that we have a very hungry group of people that are looking for this type of support. And these panels are just like a good way to let them know like, hey, we're working, like we're making things happen. And these are like short-term things that you can see and be involved in so that you can, you know, again, just get some game so you can get more prepared to break through the middle.
Oh, I'm liking that. Like fighting the good fight, as they say, fighting the good fight. Oh, superb. If there was like, what would you say was one of the main key things that you have learned over this pandemic period?
I really don't like being at home too much.
Daddy! Well,
nah, I love my children. I love my family. But I also like to travel, and this is the most I've been in one place in years. Cause you know, like I said, I made music and I toured a lot, and then with all the speaking and all the client stuff, like visiting clients and so on, you know, it was at least once, twice a month that I was going somewhere. And like last year I was going to see one of my clients in LA once a month. So, you know, it was like a constant back and forth. And there's just a certain amount of space that I get mentally by traveling. You know, like I have the time to like think through ideas, because the rest of my day is like in service of everyone else, right? Like whether that's my team, my clients, my family, and so on. So just having that space to really like think through things and be creative is something I'm missing. But I just got to be creative about doing that within the frame of what we have to do so everybody can be healthy, safe, and happy.
Perfect. Perfect. Like my last question, my final one, because yes, like, has there been a guilty pleasure you've had during this lockdown period?
Guilty pleasure. I mean, I don't watch as much TV as you might imagine. I've watched more since I've been with my lady, because she likes to watch TV. But I'm really into this TV show called The Good Place. It's a really good show.
Yeah.
It's so clever. I love it.
Okay. Wait, like, if anyone hasn't watched it, like, what season are you on?
I'm on season two.
You're on season two?
Yeah.
Did you see it coming?
No, not at all. Not at all. And that may be because, like, when I'm watching TV, I'm not really a critical thinker in that way. I'm just trying to, like, be entertained.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't thinking, like, oh, could this be?
Yeah, no. yeah, when it dropped, I was like, oh my Lord. I was like, yeah. I was like,
well played.
Yes. Oh, I like it. The Good Place. Perfect. Would you be able to tell people the lovely people out there, where they can find you?
Absolutely. I am iPoolRank on Twitter. You can also come and see us at iPoolRank.com. And yeah, those are the primary places to find me.
Excellent. What I'll do, I'll put that in the description down below so they can find you. And yeah, I've got to say, Michael, thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah, I'll definitely try getting you back on in the future. Like, yeah, I'll find out a little bit more about you, like if like what sports you're into and stuff like that.
Basketball, of course.
like there's a thing. Yeah, I'll most already just throw in something with the balls and stuff like that. See if it triggers you, and just
I mean, so my dad, being from New York, was a Knicks fan, and I'm a Sixers fan because I'm from Philly. But, you know, when I lived with him in high school, that was when the Knicks and Bulls, you know, the Bulls would just shut down the Knicks every year. So I don't have any, you know, it doesn't hurt me, but my dad went through it.
It's like, they did it to me again. Why? Why do they hate me so? Just let a man have a little bit of joy in his life. Oh, for sure.
Cool.
I'll definitely get you back on. As I say, thank you for coming on today, Michael. It's been
thanks for having me.
No worries. I'd like to say thank you to all, to my friends, my life warriors out there. Please stay safe, stay well, be excellent, be cool, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Ah, thank you much, guys. Peace. And yeah, we are.